This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard, not the billiards. It was
billiards room.
Come on already. Come on, we call it the...
The Place to Be.
The Place to Be, yes, the Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nations, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severin, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
JR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually write a whole show.
This is the third time you've said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying that
I'm curious how. I'm curious how I have more free time than
no,
you.
I'm gonna,
what does that mean?
I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I know you're used to this long, grueling podcast schedule.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Are you going to just joke and go on for the next hour?
Did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s?
I was being...
And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice to him. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
What the fuck is a shock wall?
is that the Shockmaster's wall?
He's going to fall through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
When I dream of fairy tales, I think of me and Shelly. She's my type of hype, and I can't stand when brothers tell me that I should quit chasing and look for something better. But the smile that she shows makes me a go-getter. I haven't gone as far as asking if I could get with her. I just play love by ear and hope she gets the picture. I'm shooting for her heart, got my finger on the trigger. She can be my broad, and I can be high, and I can be high. All I can do is stay up. Back as kids, we used to kiss when we played truth or dare. Now she's more sophisticated, highly educated, not at all overrated. I think I need a break.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. We have a little oop-de-loop for you here tonight. Not what you thought you were getting, and we didn't even think we were getting this. But you know what, Scott? It's an anniversary show, and we always get a little present. Always a little treat, always a little surprise for both us and our fans here on episode
250.
This one kind of snuck up on us. I feel like we're an old married couple now. These anniversaries just kind of slowly sneak up when I realize it.
Yeah, we'll go out for an Italian dinner and
the thrill is gone.
We'll go have the blue plate at 5 o'clock and
we'll go home watch some Global.
Global. But on AWA. That's it. But JR, always a pleasure. Mm-hmm. Welcome PTB Nation, as mentioned. 250 of the Place to Be podcast. And usually it takes us another 25 episodes before we start to panic about what to do for the for 300. So we don't have to worry about that. But let me tell you something. Boy, did we had a whirlwind today, JR. Because,
oh, yeah.
Nora, we were planning on going down to Dallas, Texas tonight.
And I was a little nervous. I'm like, we haven't done a vault in a while. I feel like we haven't even done the show in a while. But you know what? That continues because our run of interviews on Wednesday evenings now runs to three in a row.
Yep.
But before we get to that, Scott, let's just quickly talk about what's going on in the PTB Nation over the past week. Here's just a sampling.
Yes.
Of course, today, Ben and Jen were back with this week's recap of Total Divas. Always a great and unique read. Check that out. Week 6, ratings continue to rise. The Bellas are now following Ben Morse on Twitter. So, big news coming. Big news popping here. Place to Be Nation. 2013 Fall TV Preview Series opened with a look at the league. There'll be plenty more previews to follow in the coming weeks. Plus, you always have Jeremy Nichols and his House of Horror to keep you satisfied as well. Of course, the league premieres tonight, so get on that. And even if it's after the premiere, you can still read the overview that we put up for you. Of course, we also have a new writer at Place to Be Nation. You may have heard of him. It's a guy named Scott Keith.
Oof.
You heard him here 2 weeks ago. Scott will be penning PTB Nation articles. He started with a look at the 10 wrestling finishes he hates the most, or as he calls it, the 10 reasons to punch Vince Russo in the face. So, it was a good piece Scott wrote for us, and it's a big big coup to have Scott writing for us on a limited basis. So his stuff, again, will be exclusive to Place to Be Nation. doing it to help us out because he's a great guy. We also have tons of other great wrestling coverage, including weekly recaps of every show, live coverage of all pay-per-view events, plus other cool articles and new concepts unique to the site. In fact, if you look out for our newest edition of Five Count this month, staff will be looking at their favorite United States Championship reigns. So that should be a good one, Scott, coming up here in September to coincide with Night of Champions.
Yes.
So the full NFL and college football previews are up for your enjoyment as well. We also have full playoff and award predictions from the staff, and Place to Be's weekly power rankings will kick off on Thursday as well. And if you love comics and video games, there's no reason, Scott, you shouldn't come on to Place to Be Nation for a daily basis, because we have the most talented group of writers you will find anywhere, including Greg Phillips, Nick Duke, Todd Weber, Lita Clark, and more. They have a deep knowledge of these topics and are great reads for hardcore fans and novices as well. Check those out. Don't forget, we also house the most encompassing and cumulative group of podcasts on any site anywhere, Scott. If you like to listen to shows about sports, TV, wrestling, we have it all covered for you. We don't just touch on broad subjects. We even dive deep to deliver a narrow, niche, in-depth look at a variety of topics. If you love wrestling, you can check out Where the Big Boys Play for your NWA WCW fix. Titans of Wrestling examines 1979 to 83 WWF. Goodwill Wrestling teaches you all about 1980s Lucha. Wrestling with the Past gives you a lesson in any particular year. Right now, the entire year of 1990 is up in a podcast form. Plus, we have us here at the PTB Podcast, the boys at Off the Top Rope, the Fans Podcast, and Answer the 10 Count. Look at today and yesteryear in wrestling as well. The quality of podcast talent that is part of Place to Be Nation takes a backseat to nobody. Just ask the boys over at Pro Wrestling Only message boards. They know their stuff more than anyone, and they aren't afraid to admit it, Scott. And a lot of these shows feature guys from that site. So yes, a lot of very talented, very knowledgeable fans. If you prefer sports, you have to tune into the Kings of Sport, co-hosted by the Godfather Nate Milton of Live Audio Wrestling fame. You have heard him on Review and Impact and other shows there. Alpha Cuttowa from Bleacher Report and Marcus Vanderberg from Yahoo Sports. They cover it all, have tons of exclusive interviews and insight, and have fun while doing it. You'll always get a lot of laughs with those guys. Good show there. Also, we have Callum Leslie and the gents over at Grapple Talk. They meet all your MMA needs, past, present, and future, as well as TJ McClune in the Sports Half Hour. TJ is a journalist by day and a sports maven at night. Lands some great guests as he looks at the hot topics of the day in the world of sports. And finally, if you love variety, Scott, a potpourri of topics, we got you there, too. First, we have the official podcast of Place to Be Nation, The Brad and Chad Show. Brad and Chad will cover all topics, pop culture, and we'll also be including guests from all over Place to Be Nation. Coming up soon, they'll be doing a very in-depth Emmy preview, plus lots more on the way. We feature We Found New Music, a red-hot podcast looking at fresh new bands and tracks. The show airs live on the West Coast and streams around the world. And even better, it's hosted by Place to Be Nation's own Grant Owens. And we also have the podcast that is taking the world by storm, Scott. Richard and the Mailman. Jeff Richard, Jeff Machado, specialized in recapping, previewing, and discussing all things Breaking Bad. But you'll also get all sorts of digressions along the way, including the ever-popular Postal Tip of the Week. So there you have it. Check out everything we have to offer at PlaceToBeNation.com. And hey, you can even find this podcast here as well, with all our great interviews and vintage vaults in one spot just for you. PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop shop for your pop culture world. Scott, let's take a quick break, and we'll bring back our special guest. This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home. All right, Scott, we are back, and it is time to bring in the man. We're going to give this another shot. We had done this before. We lost a file, and we destroyed Chad Campbell's hopes and dreams, but we are back here. He is gracious enough to rejoin us and redo this, and that is the one and only, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
Well, what choice did I have? I'm a completist.
That's right.
You know, it's... Yes. It's, damn it, I've started down this road, and I've only got so many more chapters left I could do before I could say, I don't remember, because they had fired me.
Yeah,
so
what are we going to do then? We're going to have to, like, you'll have to watch all the DVDs or something, and then you can relive it with us.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Maybe we'll go heat by heat instead, and we'll do that.
Oh, no, it's easy once Triple H becomes champion, because then we could just hammer him every week.
That's right.
You know, and Scott could just be our punching bag. It'd be awesome.
And then I will spin you all over, and you will all be wearing the Not for the Innocent t-shirts.
Scott.
Give it a shot.
Scott is just in heaven right now. Just in heaven with Raw.
Oh, yeah, awesome. Because as we record this, fans, you know, this is when, you know, Triple H is on his heyday now. And he's really – it's like – he's like a Little League father. You know what I mean? Like, he never really made it as an athlete, and so now he's living vicariously through his kids. And that's kind of what I feel as I'm watching this. Like, he's getting his rocks off being the Little League parent tough guy.
Time to play the game!
Is Sheamus considered one of his children? Is that what it is?
Sheamus. Well, Sin Cara was one of the was the first black sheep.
His adopted child.
Yeah. He's like Oliver from the Brady Bunch. You know.
All right, Kev. Just quick note on Ring of Honor, since we haven't talked on air since you came to Providence. Just overall thoughts of the atmosphere there. Would you look at a comeback anytime soon?
We're definitely going to come back. I hope that it's that it becomes more than once a year. But at the very least, we know that it is going to be an annual stop on our tour. The reason is that some markets do well, and the atmospheres are great because you play them infrequently. So that when you do come to town, it's really super special. So I don't know what Providence is. I don't know if Providence can sustain 2 events a year or 4 events a year, but we definitely know it can do one. The crowd was great. It was such a fantastic atmosphere. I thought the building looked fantastic on TV, and the wrestling action speaks for itself. So, yeah, we would love to come back. I know we will. I just don't know when at this point. We've got a lot of things going on, though, because I'm already looking at events next year. That's how big the schedule is getting, that we're already looking at Pittsburgh and the night before the Royal Rumble. We're going to be in downtown Pittsburgh, right across the street from the Console Energy Center.
I guess we'll be there, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
Yeah.
Your boy.
Sweet. Which one?
I would have said the old man if I meant Scott. I'm saying your boy, JR, here.
Oh, sweet.
We're going to have a little bit of a contingent down there. Place to be Nation, we're going to the Rumble, but we were very excited when we found out you guys were going to be there Saturday night, so we will be in the house.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. To be determined. I know we're going to get something out of it. And I think as we move forward, I got a feeling that there's going to be more and more events that are recorded that are going to feel like television, as opposed to it being defined roles. This is a television event. This is a pay-per-view, now just a video on demand event. This is a traditional live event with no cameras present other than those recording for DVD. I don't know, but I've got a feeling when you go to a place like Pittsburgh and you play the night before an event like the Royal Rumble, you better do something pretty spectacular.
Yep.
So we know we're not going into this blindly, and we know we got a lot of seats to sell, and we got to do something that's pretty cool. So, and we're working on other things too, which is top secret and hush hush.
Two big shows this weekend, right? New areas,
Chattanooga and Birmingham, Alabama. They're very good. We've got some great TV stations down there in those two markets, and we're really looking forward to it. The event Saturday is going to be at the historic Balwell Auditorium, which is one of the historic destinations on the territory days of wrestling map. And a lot of great stars have been there, and I've been there before as well, and it's going to be fantastic for Ring of Honor to debut. There's tickets remaining, good seats remaining for both shows, and as we record this on Wednesday, you can go to ROHWrestling.com and get them, and I know there'll be tickets available at the door.
And as we always ask you on every time you're on, update on the Briscoes, Kevin. They back, they gone, still in limbo.
I know that Mark, of course, was back on television in the world title tournament, and Jay is going to come back to Death Before Dishonor, and he is going to hand the world title belt to the winner of the tournament.
Cool.
Other than that, I don't know.
How about the Wolves now? There's rumors that they tried out at the latest WWE camp. Any news on them?
No, there's no news. They did try out, as did a lot of other guys did, and everybody was pretty much told the same thing. You did great, and we'll let you know in 3 to 6 weeks. So,
and finally, Michael Bennett, there to stay? Seemed like it after the last set of tapings.
Signed his contract. He's locked up long term. So, yep, he and Maria both. So that's going to be it's going to be very exciting. It's athletes of his caliber don't come around too often. And circumstances being what they were, I never would have expected Mike Bennett to stay with Ring of Honor. But at the end of the day, Mike Bennett chose, apparently, I'm going to put words in his mouth, Mike Bennett took the path that he believed would make him the most happy and would allow him to be able to compete and be on television and be a star and would avoid a lot of the politics that that we know exists in the WWE. It could be that, you know, that it doesn't mean that that opportunity is going to go away forever for him, because contracts have a start date and an end date. So whatever that end date is, I'm sure that at that point he'll be able to reevaluate and look at different offers, and who knows what the wrestling landscape will look like when that happens.
Plus, he can always be happy since he's engaged to the lovely Maria. Now, Kevin, I need to ask you, because seeing Maria in person, I was on the aisle there when she came out. I don't know how you focus or concentrate in the commentary booth when this lovely lady is next to you.
I know Nigel has an awful time. We've talked about it before. He legitimately loses his train of thought when she is there. I, however, am a trained broadcast professional. That's when you go to broadcasting school, you know, they do things like that. They hold pictures up of beautiful women and make you recite, you know, refrigerator assembly directions or something. I don't know how I do it. Dude, listen, I'm old and I'm married. What do I know? Like she would have any interest in me. You know, and if I sit there and go, ga, 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 it's like, yeah, right. Get away from me, old man.
You should drop a puppies in there when you get a chance.
Oh, yeah, that's...
That's hot new material, you know.
That's hot and fresh. Here we go, kids.
Never used before.
No.
Yeah, Maria is definitely something very special. Okay, so there is your little Ring of Honor update. Of course, you can check out the Kevin Kelly-approved Ring of Honor recap on PlayStimulation.com each and every week. You like that?
I love it.
Segue.
Brandon.
Nice.
There you go.
Oh, by the way, Inside Ring of Honor last week was great with Carino playing dumb and showing up. That was. I hope this is his new gimmick, that he's going to pretend like scum never happened and just randomly show up all the time.
Yeah, that apparently is what it's going to be. It's fantastic, you know. And then you know, so I've got to ask questions on Twitter by him, and I'm like, what are you out of your mind? Bless his heart. I even had to wish him. I felt badly because his son Colby turned 18, and so I wished Colby a happy birthday, but I could not say anything to Steve. So I was like, "Hey, tell your father I wish him well." You know, because you know, whatever. It we'll see what happens. I don't know. Well, I'm less inclined to say, you know, never is never, and I thought he did a fine job, so I kind of look at it like that. I think I'm a bit of a, you know, soft heart, even though I was one of his most vocal critics and was jumping up and down like a child when ROH won, which thankfully they didn't show any of on TV because I don't think it was my finest moment, you know,
in a long list of many unfine moments.
Hey.
No, and most of them happened in the year we're about to talk about right now, the year 2000, Kevin.
That's right.
We're going to trek back. We're going to kick things off at the first half. We're going to go January through June. Let's start, of course, the main premier pay-per-view that we just referenced a minute ago, the Royal Rumble. Did you expect Cactus Jack and Triple H to be the classic that it was? What did you think about the build-up to that? Just kind of take us through the weeks leading into the Rumble.
The weeks leading up to the Rumble, I knew that it was kind of getting to the end for Mick. But at the same time, being that it was at the Garden, you knew that they were going to let it all hang out. There's something about the Garden, and I, you know, it may sound cliched now coming from me, but it's really true that the guys, whenever they got an opportunity to wrestle at Madison Square Garden, they really would throw caution to the wind and kind of go crazy a little bit. And that was really what we saw in this match. I don't think you can ever say, wow, I think it's going to be one of the most memorable matches ever, especially when you know you have a feeling that other elements could come into play. And that always, and I've said this before, you know, anytime there was always high risk or something like that, I would just watch a show like with one eye, you know, covered and fearful of what might happen. So I always worry about, you know, injuries and guys being hurt severely. So thankfully none of that happened, but yeah, That was a classic hardcore brawl of the First Order.
Was Triple H a little, I don't want to say nervous, but I mean, obviously this was a match that he needed to shine in, because with Austin on the shelf and Rock involved in something else that night, which we'll get to in a minute. Did he seem kind of, you know, a little I don't say apprehensive, but knowing that, wow, I gotta, you know, I can't have Mick carry this match. I've got to step up. Were those feelings in the back that this match needed to be really good for him?
No, I think just the opposite. I think that there was great confidence with him, and that he knew that he could do this. Now, quietly and privately, was he having any hesitation, second thoughts, fears, and worries? I'm not sure, but certainly publicly, he didn't show any of that. It needed to be him leading the show. It needed to be him stepping up and being the leader that he knew he was.
Right.
So I don't think there was any doubt. I'm trying to think if there's another match that we could compare it to where we wondered, wow, is so-and-so good enough to step up? I mean, I probably could think, just the first one that pops into my head, just for example, and it because of where it was in the time of year. I mean, this is the Royal Rumble. This is Madison Square Garden. This is a different time of year. You know, look back at Shawn Michaels and Ken Shamrock in 1997, but that was a December pay-per-view, and it just – but was Ken able to step up and be in that top spot? But he wasn't expected to lead like Triple H was. Triple H really needed to be the leader in this one, and he really did. He needed to be every bit of Mick's equal and make sure that Mick was in the right spots at the right times.
How about even on a lower level, maybe like Shawn and Razor in the ladder match at 10, you know, kind of Shawn's first chance to on a major, major stage to really carry a match?
Yeah, I guess I had always seen Shawn as a top guy. And the minute he started the character change, I always viewed him in a different light immediately. But that's a good example because, again, stepping up at Mania in that spot at WrestleMania, you know, in Madison Square Garden, it's enormous pressure. Not that the Royal Rumble anywhere else wouldn't be enormous pressure, but, boy, there is just something different about being at MSG. Because, I mean, that is really the house as far as wrestling is concerned that the McMahons built.
How about Bret and Austin at Survivor Series 96?
Bret
in terms of
Austin
needing to step up, you know, because that was his first real super, you know, big showcase match since arriving in January.
He was viewed as a top guy. And really, I guess by this point, Triple H was a top guy. I know that Dave Meltzer had always painted him as a B. You know, he was not. He was with Austin and Rock as A's. He was a B plus, and that we heard recently in a promo. So obviously, it's a very long memory. So, I guess he always viewed himself as a top guy. It didn't offend me him being in that spot, and it didn't really feel like he needed to surprise me or prove anything to me. But maybe he did in his own right, and maybe that did add to the pressure of the match. But it, you know, it certainly didn't. The performance never told even for a second that either of them were nervous. It seemed like a right off the bat, you knew it was going to be really good.
Want to ask the next one, Scott?
Yes, I thought maybe you had a follow-up.
Scott throws in the little condescending.
I miss Chad so much.
Because this we would already been on May if Chad was here. All right, another guy that needed a big win that night was The Rock. Was there any doubt that the Rumble was his?
Trying to remember back, no, I don't think so. Because this was one, you know, a lot of times the Rumble can be unpredictable. But this was one where it was very predictable, and it was and they came up with, you know, I guess Big Show almost winning to try to fool some people or maybe make them think that it wasn't as predictable an outcome as it was going to be and needed to be. So, yeah, absolutely a slam dunk, no-brainer. Rock's got to be in the main event of WrestleMania some way, somehow, and he needs to win the Royal Rumble to do it, then let's do it.
What did you think of that Rumble match as a whole? Not the most star power, but it was one of those ones similar to like maybe 98 where you knew Austin was going to win, 96 where Shawn was going to win. Do you think it kind of hurt it knowing that Rock was pretty much a lock to win?
Well, it had a few different elements. And of course, one being Madison Square Garden, which made it unique and different. And two was some of the entertaining elements in the body of the Rumble itself. It, you know, it kind of felt like a Broadway show at times, because when you had great, tremendous bursts of action, and then, you know, everything settles down and Rikishi and Too Cool get to do their dance. I mean, that's neat. And only in the Royal Rumble can you see something like that. And when you look back at what Madison Square Garden and wrestling in the WWE, WWF were, you know, with the Rockettes and Liberace at the first WrestleMania, this is now 15 years later, and look at how far we've come, where you have a 400-pound Samoan and a kid from Maine and an idiot from Memphis dancing in the middle of the ring in Madison Square Garden. That's pretty cool. Mm.
Thoughts on Taz's debut here on the show? Did he ever have a chance? Was it just bad timing? Did they kill him with that weird, gritty bulldog gimmick after his debut, where instead of being just the kind of the silent killer he was here in his Rumble match, he ended up just being kind of a plucky underdog because of his height? I thought that just destroyed his character and image right off the bat.
Well, let's talk about two things, because that's separate. Mm-hmm. First things first was the build for Taz with the vignettes, which were wonderfully done by the folks at the WWE TV studios. And they always do great work, and this was one of their best things ever. I think it was Adam Panucci, the redheaded kid that was part of the George and Adam vignettes back in the day. I think he headed up this project. And I know Taz was very inspired by the creative on this. He had a lot of things to say. He had wavered back and forth greatly about whether or not to leave ECW and to come. And this was one of the things that he knew would set him apart right away were these vignettes. Now, as far as the match itself, it was known that he was going to wrestle Kurt Angle for quite some time. But it was not known until the last – I don't know when it happened – but I remember that it was Pat Patterson that was the one that had said, why not Taz? Why not him? Why can't he beat Kurt Angle? What's wrong? You know, and I think, and at the time Kurt Angle was undefeated, would it have been better in the long run for Taz, and this would be a great question to ask him, would it have been better in the long run for Taz if he wouldn't have beat Kurt Angle in his debut match at the Royal Rumble at Madison Square Garden, or if he would have just come in sort of flying under the radar, even with this great build-in vignettes, shows some tough, shows some heart, shows some spirit, and then really starts to build into this kind of this larger-than-life character as opposed to coming out ba-boom, but then being in the deep end of the pool and everybody, Vince included, I'm sure, looking at him for the first time going, you're Taz? I mean, I could picture Vince saying that. This is him? Because I do know, and this is a quote, that he had said, if he says that catchphrase of his, beat me if you can, survive if I let you, in this locker room, he will get killed. That was what Vince believed when he saw Taz. So was he doomed from the start? Did the outcome of the match at the Royal Rumble affect that, you know, perception? I don't know. He was
So had Vince never really known his shtick then?
No, are you kidding me? He doesn't watch anything. He does not watch anything.
He just handed the checks to Paul Heyman. He really didn't have to know where the money was going.
Well, he gave he doesn't know. So it was it's always a catch-22 because you always tried to present new and different. You weren't sure how far to go, and you didn't want to insult anyone's intelligence. And you'd say, "This is his resume," you know. But because to me it was always like you almost didn't want him to know how good he could be, because then you would hope it would be like, "Wow!" Because like great Sasuke and Taka Michinoku came, and the job was supposed to be Sasuke's back in 97.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And instead it was Taka who really impressed, and Vince was like, why don't we hire the kid? And so, yeah, that's what happened. Again, it certainly didn't hurt Kurt Angle, and it only helped Taz. It's one of my most memorable favorite Royal Rumble matches. When I go back, and if I'm thinking of something to watch on YouTube, I'll go back and I'll watch just for that moment. You know, referee Jimmy Corderas there, and Taz almost throwing Kurt on his head, and Kurt not really knowing what to do in that spot. Suplexing on the floor. Then this was your first match. This was your first match at the Royal Rumble in Madison Square Garden, and doing suplexes on the floor.
that you know, often forgets, kind of forgotten and not mentioned when you think of all the great debuts and strong debuts in wrestling history, or WWF history anyway. The whole building, so the promos into that match. I mean, you can count on your hand probably as many guys have debuted that strongly.
He and Jericho are the first really two that come to mind. Mm-hmm. And then anybody else in the modern era? Eh.
Shield, that's about it.
Eh. Give me a break. 20 years from now, let me ask you this.
Yeah, I know.
20 years from now, Justin, is anybody really going to remember the Shield? Or are they going to remember Chris Jericho?
Oh, Jericho. But Jericho is also a megastar.
Mm.
But wait a minute now. Jericho is also a megastar.
Mm-hmm.
So was Jericho a megastar first?
I don't think he was a megastar when he came in. He was more well-known than the Shield was.
Yeah, he was known when he came in.
You don't think any of the Shield guys could go anywhere? Like, you don't think Dean Ambrose?
No, you didn't. That's not what I said.
Okay.
Who's going to be more remembered? The Shield, the collective. You know what I mean? Yeah, they've done a nice job of bringing them in. And I'm not damning them. I think they're great. I think they're very talented. I just don't see what the WWE is doing anymore as having the impact that the creative had just a few years ago. Now, the Wyatt family has been interesting. That's kind of unique and different. But unfortunately, I don't think they have the wrestling to back it up. I don't think they're good enough in the ring. Jericho, the star power, Jericho had all the intangibles. So yeah. Then that's the thing when you defeat all the enemies and there isn't any more left to conquer, there's nobody else to bring in new except the people that you grow yourself. So it's kind of like eating, you know, fish that you grow out in the backyard as opposed to going out and capturing, you know, hooking that one on the line and landing it in the boat after a tremendous struggle. So when you go out and you catch your dinner with a net in the backyard and, you know, farm-raised fish, it's just not the same.
So you get parables here, too, when Kevin Kelly's with us.
I wrote that one down.
just quickly, then, about where Taz went from there, like we mentioned, too, the whole gritty bulldog underdog thing.
Yeah, and then he went from that to, well, I guess then they went to Philly and killed him dead. And then he decided to go beat up announcers. But he... Again, I always felt like in the classic wrestler training, you know, you land and then you kind of roll to get back to your feet. And I felt like he did a nice job of rolling back up and getting vertical again and moving forward. Because no matter what whatever was thrown at him, and it was tough on him, I know, because he and I would chat about a little bit briefly here and there. I didn't get too deep into, you know, Taz's psyche, but I got to know him a little bit and I heard his frustrations. And I understood them, and I had heard them before. And I just said, you know, kind of – you got to kind of work your way through it and just keep doing your best. That's really all you can do. That's the only thing you're in control of. So, but he did fine because then he wanted to be an announcer, and he wound up being, you know, really, I thought, really, really smart on Sunday Night Heat.
This happened a little bit later in the year, but let's talk about it now because it's Taz related. What did you think the whole – letting Taz go, win the ECW title, coming out, fighting Triple H on Raw, then giving it back on ECW?
Well, that was because they needed to get the belt off of
Mike Awesome.
Mike Awesome. There was never a doubt that in Paul's mind that Mike Awesome was going to drop the belt. He will come back and he will lose the title. So, yeah, I thought it was a good idea. And, of course, you know, I don't think it was I don't think it was forethought of that much. I think it might have been, hey, Hunter saying, now it's time for me to beat Taz.
See, that one didn't bother me as much, though, of all the Triple H transgressions, because I thought at the time, you're still trying to establish yourself. I mean, to have the ECW champion beat the WWF champion would have been pretty counterproductive. They didn't own ECW at that point. They weren't part of it.
They didn't need to do the match.
No, you're right.
You don't need to have a finish.
I thought it was kind of cool.
You didn't. You're a WWF fan.
No, I was an ECW fan too, but I thought it was kind of cool. I don't know. The guy's on the roster. Why not have the match? I thought it made the ECW title look good. I mean, Taz hung with them. They had Tommy Dreamer come out, and it was a big deal for them to be showcased on Raw like that. I mean, that was pretty big.
Who won the match?
The Game, right, Scott?
Bet your ass. Let's stick with ECW. Let's talk about another before because I can go on totally about that match, but. Another
he's on his TV right now.
another ECW alums that needed to make a big impact that night were the Dudleys. Do you think they finally broke through with that tables match against the Hardys? I mean, it's memorable for many reasons. And what'd you think of the whole, you know, Bubba staring off into space after putting women through tables? What were your thoughts on that angle?
I really enjoyed it, and always never asked him, but always wondered like where that came from, and just thought that it gave such a different level of sick and twisted to whatever they were doing, like a little bit, you know. You could almost, because D-Von get the tables. I mean, that became, you know, part of the shtick. But that staring off blankly into space, what was he doing? You know, I always thought that was really cool. Yeah, they stepped up big. They hit the ground running, I felt like, when they came in. And it was just them being put in the right positions at the right time. Michael Hayes was really coming through agenting. Had great confidence in those guys and adding another team in the mix with them and with the Hardys, with Edge and Christian, you had a lot to play with.
JR, any follow-ups?
Yeah, I was getting to it. So let's talk about the Radicals coming in now. We're past the Rumble, heading into February. A lot of stories surrounding this whole thing. Did Vince mainly want Benoit but took the rest anyway, or was it Eddie that was the main prize? Did you think they would get a fair break coming in and get a good push? And then there's another story I want to get your take on, but let's talk about those first.
Well, I may have told this story before in other forums, and if I'm repeating myself here on the Place to Be podcast, I apologize. But here was the way it was laid out. Long before they debuted in late January of 2000, long before, we had started a subversive campaign to make contact – not tamper with, but make contact with guys that were currently under contract to WCW to let them know that if the time was ever right, and if they did want to leave and join the WWF, that there would be a home for them. And that was Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero. I talked to Ric Flair personally. I saw him in the Buffalo airport. Long before that, when they did Nitro in Buffalo, we did Raw in Toronto, and I drove back to Buffalo and flew out, and so I saw Flair at the airport in the morning, and this was when he was really having contract issues with Bischoff, and I said Rick, why don't you just come back to Stanford with me? Let's go, let's get on the plane. And we'll go talk to Vince. And he laughed and laughed and laughed. And I said, when the time is right, we'll get Vince and we can talk to everybody and we can fix all this. And he really appreciated it, thought it was very nice. And that was the extent of our conversation. I had no problems going and talking to people and saying those very same statements to me. Who am I? I don't have the power to hire and fire. And what was I saying? I was making a bunch of, you know, I was just making generalizations, general comments, you know. But the intent was clear. We wanted guys to start coming our way because we had lost and lost and lost and lost and lost in this free agent war. And the only thing that we had ever gotten, not that it was bad, but we had gotten some ECW guys. And we got Chris Jericho. And with Jericho, we knew that the pendulum was swinging our way. So let's start to get some guys and let's see what we can do. So was Benoit the prize? Was Guerrero the prize? Was it Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn? Was Shane Douglas supposed to be part of this whole thing? I don't know. We were welcoming conversation with people that were not contractually obligated to WCW anymore. And I guess when Bischoff decided to give guys releases, that kind of sped up the process. And I don't know. I don't know the whole conclusion of the story. Whether Shane was supposed to come, and that deal was squashed, and they came in spite of him. And I don't doubt Shane because I know Shane has said that before. I'm not saying that that's not true at all. I just had never heard that story before, and so I could see them not wanting Shane. I guess because the way he left, it left a bad taste in some people's mouths, mainly. Well, I don't even know who, but that might have been the reason why. So who knows? But we were happy to have him, that's for sure. It was a difference maker right off the bat.
Did you think they'd continue to get that push, or did you think it was going to be similar to like Taz, where they were slowly kind of peaked in their debut?
No, I always, I guess I'm the eternal optimist, and I look at every situation uniquely. And I say, if we invest in these guys and we bring them in, they're not getting paid peanuts. They're getting good money. Wouldn't we want to monetize on that investment? That apparently was not the case. What I learned is, I guess there's a certain amount of deprogramming that comes in. And I saw that with Jericho. I didn't really see it with the Dudleys as much, but I, you know, here and there. We certainly saw with the Radicals. And I guess there just is, you know, it's the WWF way, and then everybody else does it wrong. So they have to be sanitized and scrubbed and brainwashed and then taught to learn how to work like top guys, which I never really understood. So
that Dean Malenko needs to know how to work.
Well, I mean, obviously, look at him. I mean, geez, he's only got 1,001 holds. What? What is that? John Cena has 5.
But they work.
That's right.
Over and over again. speaking of WCW, when the news came back that after, what, a mere 2.5 months or so that Russo had already been fired, what were your thoughts on that, and was there any thoughts of him coming back?
I laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed when I heard he got fired. I spent a lot of time wishing ill upon him after he had left, because it again may have said it earlier on another version of the podcast here. When he had left, he was sort of, you know, blazing his way out of Dodge and didn't worry about who he hurt on the way out. So he and I had worked together very closely, and he had written an untrue and scathing review of me, because he was who I directly reported to. He did it to myself, and he did it to Dennis Brent just to be spiteful, because he knew he was leaving. And I refused to sign it, told Human Resources where they could go. And so when I heard he had gotten fired from WCW, I danced a quiet jig. You know, Jim Cornette still maintains that he wants to piss on Russo's grave when he dies. That's a recent comment too. He's never let that go.
He never holds grudges, so that's a no.
Yeah, exactly. Rolls right off his back.
Yes, it's water off a duck's back with Jim Cornette. No, I was very happy. No, there was no thought at all that he was going to come back. I think probably, you know, whoever was writing the show, if it was Chris Kresge at the time or whatever, I think there was probably some, you know, a little bit of question as to whether or not he would come back. But no, there was, I think it was moving forward absolutely with what was going on.
Any specific memories of that Dallas Raw, that great 10-man tag, the Radicals, The Rock was in there, and then Kane makes his big return at the end, Paul Bearer in the red jacket after he had been off TV. Just say that about that kind of a magical night in Dallas.
Yeah, it really was. That was there's some nights and there's some matches where you put them together and you just know that this is just going to be a barn burner. Reminded me of that match in Calgary a few years before, which I think I'd heard that mentioned going in, that this was going to feel like that, you know, Canadian Stampede main event, without it being, you know, the Hart legacy and that tie-in and that connection. But there was just going to be that level of star power, and these guys were just going to go in there and just put on just ball buster main event and tear the house down. So, yeah, that was a really incredible, great atmosphere. Dallas, always such a great wrestling town. Always kind to the WWF. It was, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You talked earlier about guys that were crazy over the night at the Rumble, and that was Rikishi and Too Cool. I think you called him a loser from Memphis or something like that.
Right, yeah. Yes. Brian Christopher.
Yes, Brian Christopher. They were mega over. Fans loved them. Do you think they not misused them, but didn't dip into the well deep enough for them? They could have done even more, or were they fine right where they were?
No, they were. There was no well to dip from. That was it. That was their act. Mm-hmm. Once you saw that, that was it. And the reason I can say this with great confidence is because I know Terry Taylor had spoken to them about saying, maybe you need to find a way to have the comedy thing to one side, but then get an edge to the other, you know, develop a real aggressive streak, develop something so that it's different. So then this way you can be in more serious matches. Scotty was all for it, said that makes perfect sense. This is what we should do. Brian Christopher said, no, this is what the people want to see. This is what we'll do. So he made short-term money, but they didn't have long-term success, which makes him an idiot. And he happens to be from Memphis. So therefore, he is an idiot from Memphis.
Were you surprised Rikishi got that gimmick over? Well, it came a long way from Sumo Sammy.
No, listen, when you talk about starting with Sumo Sammy, it was just I can't remember, and I know I told the story last time I was here, and I wish I could remember where, like, who finally realized that that was not what we should be calling him. I think it might have been Vince who saw it for the first time and said, Sumo Sammy, and that's Junior. We'll get back to you with a name. I swear, I think it was like that. I felt so good for him to get to that, you know, to come back and be able to do all this and that and entertain. You know, I mean, we know how good and talented he was. He didn't have anything to prove to anybody. But just to be able to take this crazy gimmick, which was sort of, I don't know, given to him. And I always thought it was given to him like as a slight. Well, he's got a big giant fat ass on him, so we should make him a sumo wrestler. And he took the, you know, the fish heads and made instead a wonderful dinner out of it. So. Yeah, I think I always applaud when guys overcome vindictive booking. Like, I think that's what that was.
All right, Kev, around this time, two major announcements went down, both kind of outside the world of wrestling a little bit. Let's start with the first one, WWF New York. Backstage feeling when that thing kicked off, did you think they kind of did all they could have done? What were the positives and negatives, just overall views of the restaurant?
Well, I do want to take a time out right now to look at my fantasy baseball team, and I am very pissed off at Francisco Liriano and Irvin Santana, who are stinking it up tonight for me. Thanks, as I'm in the playoffs now. Anyway, I got 2 weeks, and I'll just shut it off so it's not distracting me. WWF New York was another distraction. It was the first of two distractions, the second being, of course, the XFL. And I thought, like, I thought it was kind of cool in a way, but I think I was right in my concern that it was never going to be as good as it could have been, because what are we going to do there? Are we going to have matches there? Is it going to be like when we used to do Shotgun Saturday Night and we would have live, what would it be like, live dinner theater? What do we do? Well, I did the American Gladiators live. In Florida, you remember the TV show? Well, we had a theater, and ECW actually did a pay-per-view from that same building after the American Gladiators had vacated in Kissimmee, Florida. That was where Taz beat Shane Douglas for the belt.
Okay.
The Millennium Theater, it was called, in Orlando. But we did nightly dinner theater. People would sit down and eat chicken and watch teams compete against the Gladiators, and I was one of the hosts. But anyway, so we didn't know what it was going to be. We didn't know how it was going to work. We just knew that it was another thing to do, to go to New York City, and another aggravation and just something else. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. And to see, you know, to see the New Yorkers lined up around the building, that's always neat. And it was cool inside. And there's, you know, again, Midtown Times Square, that's pretty good real estate right there. The first night was a lot of fun.
Do you think they didn't just go – it seems like they tried to do it half and half. Like, on one hand, it was just meant to be a restaurant. On the other hand, it was supposed to be like a Hall of Fame memorabilia store, wrestling-themed out the ass. But on the other hand, they shied away from it in some spots. Do you think they just had to go all in or all out, and said they kind of ended up with this hybrid mix of half nostalgia?
Right. And what was the point of it? Mm-hmm. What was the idea? And they had – I guess when they were going back and forth with the Las Vegas casino, it was kind of the same thing. What was the point of this restaurant going to be? Was it entertainment? Was it to host events? Was it to just have paraphernalia and belts hanging on the wall? Would it be a Hard Rock with guitars, you know, or with wrestling trunks? on the walls. What would it be? And I don't think they ever figured it out. The servers were great. The food was always very good. The people that worked there were nice, and they always took care of us whenever we did appearances there. So we had fun. But and at the end of the day, it wasn't what it could have been, because I don't think they ever knew what it was supposed to be.
I agree with you about the media, about the down the middle, because I'd gone there. I've been there. I was there probably 5 or 6 times. And yeah, you'd have people walking in that weren't wrestling fans, and they give that, oh God, look, you know, that like typical nose up in the air wrestling fan look. And then the diehards would go in there and they'd be like, oh, this is cool. And then what?
Yeah, well, you know? The diehards were cool as long as they could get, you know, they felt like, and justifiably so, let's have some, what's special about this?
Right.
I'm a huge diehard fan.
Exactly.
Can I get autographs?
Yeah.
Can I get unprecedented access? Can I get to see things I wouldn't see any other place?
Exactly.
And it wasn't that either.
No, I think they were like 10 years too early with that thing, because it fit well at the time as far as popularity goes. That's when obviously the mainstream and everything else is huge. But I feel like nowadays they have a better grasp on the nostalgia. I feel like then the nostalgia thing wasn't really in vogue. I feel like if they did something like that now, they'd have a better grasp on how to work the, like you said, unprecedented access and the, you know, have all the memorabilia out and different guys doing autographs and signings. I feel like they weren't, that mindset wasn't there yet. It was, everything was still current.
And certainly the, with the Hall of Fame taking off the way it has, and them talking about actually building a physical place. Yeah, you're right that it was ahead of its time in that regard, but certainly capitalizing on. Although I would have to imagine you could probably get something in Midtown cheaper than what you paid for it in the year 2000.
Yes, probably.
But anyway, yeah, and I never know how much they lost. I never know what they did, but everything that they, you know, whenever they do something outside of wrestling, it never works, and most of the things they do inside of wrestling don't work. Very few things work very, very well. Fortunately for them and for the entire wrestling industry, the things that have worked really well were WrestleMania, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and The Rock, and a few other things sprinkled in. But those are pretty much the big four over the last 30 years.
Yeah, you mentioned quickly the casino. Of course, it was a Debbie Reynolds casino they purchased. What do you have any other info on that thing? I mean, they bought it. They were going to do something. Then they sold it, right? And then they demolished it.
I think they wound up making money on that deal.
Did they?
Yeah, because they bought it for, they bought it in auction, and then they would turn around and sold it and didn't do anything to it in the meantime. I think that was just one thing where they realized, hey, listen, this is going to be a nightmare and a disaster that if we start to get in this. And I think it's different people, too, that – I think, again, it's a different level of conversation that you have to have when you want to put a casino in Las Vegas, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, that might have been the thing where Vince said, you know, I think we'll just sit quietly and do nothing with this. And, hey, can we sell this thing? Yeah. Okay, great. Let's get rid of it.
All right. Let's talk about the XFL. You mentioned it quickly. Another major announcement at this time. This is a book I recently read, the Long Bomb book about the history of the XFL. Oh, interesting stories, kind of more to it than you realize, Kevin. I know when we did this the first time around, you had a lot of cool insight into this. Can you just kind of talk about the XFL and your view of the evolution of it?
It was, and I was the first guy to put up my hand and say, this is a horrible, rotten idea. This is going to take the eye off the ball of wrestling, and I think this is a bad idea. I had grown up during the USFL, and I remember just how that did not work. And it was greed from the owners. Yeah, they had a cool product in the spring, and they competed against it. But you're going against the NFL, and this is a different story. Okay, so now they want to try this spring league again. They want to try to recreate the USFL, and great, but we're a wrestling company, guys, and we need to remember that. Now, this wasn't me saying this to Vince McMahon because I didn't have that kind of access, but I had said it to folks at the TV studio and a lot of my peers, and I said, I think it's a bad idea, but we'll see what happens. And yeah, I was right, because they weren't going to hire a bunch of people just to, and they weren't going to build facilities to duplicate the you know what. Now, they had talked about it, that they had already broken ground and started to expand the television studio for the XFL folks to come in and be able to start to do this, but it wasn't going to be until the second year. And they never took time to develop the product or develop the organizations or the personnel, you know, scouting and training and things like that, so that the infrastructure wasn't there. It's let's just slap some teams together and let's get players on the field and let's go. So the quality of football was going to suck. It wasn't going to be manned or staffed by anybody that knew anything about football from a production standpoint. Yeah, there were some people hired, but as far as the main packages and things like that that we'd be built and the production assistants, that was all the same folks that were doing Raw and SmackDown. And these folks were stretched thin to begin with. Now they were just stretched even further. Mm-hmm. And when the end finally came, it was you know, there were not a lot of tears. No one cried when it was over. And everyone was happy and thankful to see it go.
I remember a few people saying also that they injected too much wrestling into it. It would have been nice if Vince was just a silent guy, silent, and just let the company, let the league happen, like get, you know, have football people in there and grow it. Instead, he had to come out, make a big thing, and he had the Rock quotes on the scoreboard and Austin, all this other stuff, and the football fans are like, I don't want to watch this. I don't want to watch WrestleMania with a football. Do you think that might have been a problem too, that they didn't make it a standalone football league funded by the WWF? Instead, they needed to make it like Raw with a field.
Yeah, there were there were some good things that did come out of it. Of course, the cameras on the cables, which we see now today, mm-hmm. that came from the XFL. So that has given the fans, you know, access that they didn't have before. So that was kind of a cool thing. I thought here was a thought that I had had. One of the things that I had always criticized Vince Russo for was I felt like he didn't care about the wrestlers and that he would put them in situations where they could get hurt or look bad, mainly get hurt. And I felt like the XFL, with the way they did the kickoff, that was the same thing. That was just, you don't understand football if you're doing this. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, we had somebody get hurt really badly. And to me, that was just like, how do you not know that this is a bad thing? And now look at how far. Okay, so now we're 13 years later. $765 million settlement between the NFL and veterans over concussions, baseline testing, and millions of dollars being spent now in testing with concussions. And this is the way you're going to treat these players? That's why I don't like MMA, because I think MMA is just brutality. And not that the MMA organizations don't care about the fighters, but I just, again, I don't think there's enough safety involved. So that was one thing that I just hated. They didn't care. They put too much wrestling into it. They started making vignettes, right, with the cheerleaders, mm-hmm. and doing mm-hmm. all kinds yep. of that. And yep. that was the way they were going to get ratings, because the football players, as soon as Vince was out there and he was tooting his horn about the start of the league, it just had a bad feeling.
Yep, I agree.
So, yeah,
they rushed it. They just rushed it. If they waited the year or longer and had a longer training camp and prepped, and the games just were not good early because the guys had not played with each other before. I mean, football is a team sport at its core, and you need practice. You can't just go out there and start playing, you know?
Right. The only other thing that I did like, too, was the that they played football games at, I guess now, what is it, AT&T Park, where the Giants played, San Francisco Giants. Now, that was not and that was the first time I had seen football in that baseball stadium. They do a bowl game now there, and they've had other football games there. But I remember how cool that stadium looked as a football-configured stadium. Of course, people bitched because they said this was going to be a baseball-only stadium, and now they're hosting football games in it, which is just going to screw things up for the Giants. But anyways, such was not the case, as it only lasted 1 year.
And now Vince, before the XFL, had other intentions to get into football, right? Wasn't he going to buy the CFL he was going to buy?
First it was the CFL, and then it was the Minnesota Vikings. So yeah, he's had an itch to get into football for a while, and I don't know why. Because I don't think he ever watched football.
Yeah, I think he was a football nut, by the way he talked.
No, I think he just wanted to see how big his penis was compared to everybody else's.
Like Donald Trump.
That's it.
Him and Trump are very similar. What do you think? What do you think if he actually bought the Vikings? What it would have been like?
Well, compared to Ziggy Wolf, let's see. Do they have a new stadium? No.
They will.
Yeah. Is it financed? Did they get the ballot initiative approved?
You don't think Vince would have popped for a new stadium if he owned a team?
Well, I mean, yeah. Could he have funded it himself? Eventually, yeah. I think he would have.
I definitely think he would have.
I think he would have, too. It would have been a big, gaudy-looking mess, probably, with ropes and weird shit.
That's right. The Pat Patterson wing. You know. Yeah, it could have had a lot of different things to it. I don't know if he would. How would that have changed the? How would that have changed everything? I don't know.
Mm.
But let's look at his track record. Every time Vince does something outside of wrestling, it doesn't work. So, would he have? And would he have gotten approval from the other NFL owners? Let's remember, this is not, you know, come one, come all. This is a guy who avoided, you know, federal prosecution on steroid charges. But that doesn't mean that the other owners might have said, I'm not really feeling it.
Right.
You know? And just because he's got a lot of bread doesn't mean they're going to let him in the fraternity. Mm-hmm. So that might have been it. I mean, didn't they deny Rush Limbaugh the opportunity to be part of the ownership team of the St. Louis Rams?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
So yeah, it goes. It you know it can go all ways. Who knows? But yeah, it would have been interesting. Interesting to see how things would have changed.
Let's go to late February in Hartford. No Way Out show. I was actually at.
Of course you were.
Of course I was. Duh. Great atmosphere that night. Obviously because you know the Hell in a Cell and Mick's last match. Of course, me wearing my Triple H shirt. The vitriol of many fans. What were your thoughts on that night? What were your memories of that night leading up to this match and what would be, you know, in theory, I guess, at the time, Mick Foley's last match? And of the two, the street fight at the Rumble and this Hell in a Cell, which one do you like better?
Well, the street fight at the Rumble was much better because of the lack of the gimmicky cage, which was done as a result of the injuries suffered from the lack of a gimmicky cage at the King of the Ring. They went too far, and they made the soft landing hydraulic cage, I think, to me, just a little bit. the night for me, though, was tempered with enthusiasm because Billy Gunn had hurt his shoulder and was in a lot of pain. And he's a friend of mine, and he still had to go out there and fake his way through that match with the Dudleys and then had to shoot the angle the next night on Raw to get him out of DX, and his shoulder was out. Like, he was in agony. So, yeah, it sucked. It sucked. I hate when guys go through that stuff, you know? So it was like, yeah, great, you know, wrestling, yay. This is one of those times where you just would like to go home and not really think about it because it kind of sucks. But, that match was memorable, and certainly Mick, I thought, got the... You know, the right send off and everything happened the way it should have. And that would have and should have been it. Instead, he came back at WrestleMania. So,
with Billy there, do you know, were there any plans for the Outlaws to just keep trucking along during 2000? Because eventually X-Pac just kind of slid in and teamed up with Road Dogg. Did they pretty much do what they were planning on doing? Was Billy going to leave DX either way? Because the next night they ended up kicking him out on Raw.
Yeah, I don't remember. If it was, I'm guessing, because everything, I guess, you know, was set up for it to transpire the way that it did. So yeah, I don't know what the plans were. I don't know how they would have been, how plans were affected by Billy Gunn's injury, because I don't know what was going to happen after that fact, for, you know, without the injury. But certainly when the injury happens. And these things just always have a way of happening at the right time or at the wrong time, let's say. Well, we're going to make a change anyway, so now I guess we have to make a change.
Kurt Angle's ascension. Too fast, slow, just right. Did you think the slow build early helped Angle, allowed him to kind of grow? Do you think it was thanks to the stacked roster that they were allowed to do that? Didn't have to rush him in.
No, I think it was. I think it was the right speed. I think everything was done just the right way. The right little mix of vignettes and character matches. Getting matches with different experienced guys on the road. Getting to experience life on the road. Adjusting to WWF life. Easier now than then because it was all domestic. So there were not international tours that would take you away for 2 weeks at a time to come back to do Raw. It was, it was pretty much Thursday, get ready, Friday morning, leave, get to the town, show, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, some weeks, and not, sometimes not even a Friday. But most weeks it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So 5-day work week, not too bad. Yeah, not the easiest life in the world. Certainly 9-to-5 is a little bit better, but it gave Kurt a good introduction into the life and being able to handle it.
One of the other returns as we headed toward WrestleMania was the return of Vince. Vince was gone after losing to Triple H and Armageddon, and then Shane came back on TV as well. But they were babyfaces, of course, because they were going against the evil, well, to everyone else anyway, McMahon, Helmsley, Faction. Was it time for them to finally be babyfaces after a couple years? Did Vince need to kind of change things up a little bit for his character? And we then had the main event at WrestleMania in Anaheim. McMahon in every corner. McMahon's everywhere. What were your thoughts on that?
It was I think that having Shane and Vince come back, it was no matter what Vince does, no matter how many bad things Vince does or says, people love him and respect him. But really just enjoy booing him too. So it's fun. You can't have him be like that for very long because people like booing Vince McMahon. They really enjoy it. But there's fondness for him. There really is a great level of respect because he is such a good performer that people just enjoy him. So having him come back from time to time, and we've talked about this before, the fact that like the folks at USA every once in a while would go, hey, how about Vince? Let's bring him back, They always saw him as a guaranteed ratings winner. Send him away for a little while, cool him off, and then have him come back. And Vince would, publicly, and he would say, oh, I don't want to be on camera, I don't want to be a performer, but his ego was such that you knew that he did. So it was a, you were always kind of going back and forth with that. Like, well, which is it, Vince? Obviously, your ego is huge, so you like being on TV, or do you? But yeah, when they came back, it was nice. Against those freaking McMahon Helmsley. Puh, 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 hak tui.
Show respect for the Faction.
Well, one of the McMahons, Linda, was in the corner of Mick Foley. What did you think about bringing Mick back for TV? Or for Mania, rather. What was the thought backstage? Did you agree with it, or do you think it was just too soon and ruined kind of the send-off he had?
Get him the payoff. Give him the WrestleMania main event payoff that he didn't get the 2 years before. Well, the year – 2 years before? No, last year, the year before.
Yeah, 99.
Yep. That was the one where he was supposed to get the main event spot, being the triple threat with Rock and Austin, and he didn't get it. So now he's in a main event in a four-way. So, yeah, we split the money four ways. Instead of three ways, and you're broken down, but some is better than none. So I think they, I'm sure that they asked Mick about it and said, well, we can have Linda in your corner and it'll be kind of cool. And, you'd be in there with Hunter and Brock and the Big Show. And what do you think? Yeah, sure. Why not? I like money.
Obviously, in history, WrestleMania is supposed to be the night that everybody goes home happy. Babyface wins, all supposed to go home happy. The next night, we start from scratch. Well, obviously, that night didn't happen. Vince, some say predictably, others not, turned heel, and Hunter won the belt back. First guy in the history of WrestleMania, heel comes in as champ, leaves as champ. Should Rock or Mick have gone over, and should Vince have not turned heel? Should he have been able to matriculate as a face a little longer?
I think part of the issue was who would obviously Mick couldn't do it. Big Show, no. Who would Rock have wrestled if he indeed was champion? And you know, let's put him on the chase. And I think Hunter deserved it. I think Hunter earned it at that point. And it was needed and necessary and the right thing to do. And Vince doing all that, that was the right thing for business. So yeah, it was, but extremely predictable. I don't think there was anybody that was surprised by the outcome of that show. Especially not you, Scott.
No, I was on cloud nine. I was stunned. I was a little stunned, but I was on cloud nine, of course.
What are your memories of that night overall, Kevin? Did it feel like a big Mania, or was it kind of still like the year before, smaller stadium? And also just the quality of the show. It felt like every guy on the card maybe was trying a little bit too hard. It seemed like a lot of kind of slips and just kind of flubs here and there, and even the commentary was a little bit off. It just felt like everyone had an off night. Any reason for that, and did it feel like a Mania?
Nah, it felt like Mania to me. We had done the WrestleMania all day long thing, which I thought was really cool. Again, guys try hard, and sometimes in big spots, you know, you'll have a Super Bowl that's littered with turnovers, and eventually you got to settle down and play some football. It can happen. It's just one of those things. But it felt more like a big show than other Rumbles had, or than other Manias had. When I started, you know, the first one I was there for was 97, and that was, you know, so 13 in the Allstate Arena, Rosemont Horizon, and that felt like a Raw. And then the next year was Philly, and that felt like a little bigger Raw. And then after that, we were in
Anaheim.
Where?
Anaheim. No, Boston.
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 Then Philly.
Chicago, right.
Right. Boston, then Philly, then Anaheim. So, yeah, they were what they were. I mean, they were different arena setups without the big stage so we could sell more tickets. And that was the part I liked. I liked to see how many more people we could get into the building. I really loved it when we did Sunday Night Heat in January, when we did a matinee, and that's where we put WrestleMania tickets on sale. So you couldn't get WrestleMania. The first chance to get WrestleMania tickets for Philly was if you bought a ticket to come to the Sunday matinee show where we recorded Heat live to tape. And at the time, we had set up First Union Center attendance record. So that was pretty cool. There was just a mob scene. It was an absolute mob scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the highlight moments of 2000, a new member of the WWF family was born. Future WWF Hall of Famer, the great Mae Young, gave birth to a hand.
Will you stop?
I wish Gorilla was there to say that. I have three words for you, Kevin. What the fuck?
Those are probably the three most ass words ever about that thing. I was telling the story just the other day. It was, I don't know where the idea began, but I can tell you how it was paid off. And we go back to the scene of the crime, Madison Square Garden. No, not where May and Mark had allegedly done the deed, but where the McMahon family, of course, had become legend and promoting boxing and wrestling since the early 1920s to the year 2000, where now I see in the early part of the afternoon Vince leaving the prop area backstage carrying this hand, wildly gesticulating and walking and laughing. He has something in mind. So now we go to the scene. Live on television. This is not a pre-tape. One of the writers, Tommy, who also wrote for Andy Richter. I can't remember his last name, but he was a really nice guy. He was the EMT, or the person giving birth, because again, May's water surprisingly broke. And Briscoe and Patterson, right? Briscoe and Patterson. Briscoe mainly the most important person in the room. So here's why Vince was laughing and wildly gesticulating down the hall. Not because he was going to have Mae Young give birth to a hand. But because he was going to cover that hand in some sort of goo. And Tommy, the writer, was going to reach down and pull this handful of goo out of a bucket or something, and it would look like, you know, to the TV audience at home that Mae Young had just given birth to this hand, this goo-covered hand. And Vince McMahon watched while on live television his one of his best friends, Jerry Briscoe, would throw up. That was the reason why the payoff was done the way that it was, because when he saw the hand and he came up with the idea, he knew that he could make Jerry Briscoe throw up on live television. And, and that is that. It's nice to have a lot of money.
Yeah.
When you got so much scratch that you could just have fun and come up with a bit to make your friend throw up on live TV. Oh, and he did too. He threw right up as soon as he saw it.
He's coming at you.
And he did.
All right, Kev, let's chat about a couple gimmicks around at the time and just kind of lightning round style here.
I will give you one more Jerry Briscoe puke story real quick, if you don't mind.
Let's Mike, do it.
Go right ahead.
Mike Mondo reminded me of this one this past weekend when we were at the Ring of Honor tryout camp seminar thing we did. It was awesome. That when they dropped the poo on the Spirit Squad, of course it wasn't. It was what it was, you know, it was just a prop. Anyway, so he comes, Vince walks back through the curtain and Gorilla all covered in shit and goes right to Briscoe, right, who's sitting at the table there at the gorilla position, and he jumps over there, give me a hug, Briscoe, give me a hug. And that was all Jerry needed to have. And just as Vince is like trying to climb over the table and wrap himself around Jerry Briscoe, Briscoe's just throwing up all over the place.
Briscoe throwing up never gets old on this show.
I mean, you gotta, if you ever have the Headbangers on as guests, they'll tell the story. Like Mosh sent Jerry a video of like a German Scheisen film or something like that. Here, click on this link for great amateur wrestling action featuring Danny Hodge. And of course, you know, it's some guy pinching a loaf in some broad's face. And the minute the minute the video link comes on, you know, so Briscoe, like, so Mosh sends it to him. Briscoe opens it. He starts to watch it. He realizes what it is. He can't shut it off in time, and he sees it just enough, and it makes him throw up in his own house. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, people trying to make Jerry Briscoe throw up.
We had Thrasher on. He didn't tell us that story. Very disappointing.
Yeah.
You didn't ask him. But it wasn't him that did it. It was
somebody who wasn't aware.
Yeah, Chaz did it.
Okay. All right, here's a few gimmicks. Tell us about them. Thoughts, whether they worked or not, memories. APA.
Obviously, they worked. They worked in spite of Vince Russo trying to, you know, take dumps on them. So, yeah, no, they worked beautifully. They were exactly what they were supposed to be. They had morphed from the Acolytes into the Acolyte Protection Agency. Just good-natured boys smoking cigars, playing cards, and drinking, which is what they did anyway.
Did anyone realize maybe not the best idea for a t-shirt was always pounding ass?
You know. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Just curious. It's an odd choice. TNA. The tag team, not the failed promotion.
Yeah, right. No, I again thought it was really cool. A great learning opportunity for Trish to come in, and you knew the slings and arrows were going to be numerous. Mostly from within. Anytime a woman comes in, there is tremendous pressure on them. So she had a different, even though at first was kind of like, oh, it's kind of like a new twist on Sunny. She didn't have that Sunny vibe at all. She was very, you know, she got along. She got it. She understood she was going to make mistakes and was willing to learn. And it owned up to things when they went wrong. Wasn't the yeah, but type of person. Maybe was at first a little bit, but then had like one incident and then that was it. And boy, that was it. After that one time right away, I think it was, we did a show like in her hometown and was kind of expecting things to go one way and they went another on purpose. So, you know, just let's try it out. Let's see how she gets it. And she got it. She understood. So
did you think she eventually had what it took to be a star, or did she surprise you?
She did not surprise me at all, because the minute I saw her, I just could tell. Just one of those things. You get a good feeling in your stomach about people, or you get a bad feeling in your stomach about people. I had a good feeling about her. Lita, too.
Bull Buchanan.
Oh, that's my man right there. He had done vignettes when he was in OVW with some of the coolest things I'd ever seen. The old Davis Arena where OVW did training. It was sort of like a bombed out old warehouse, just this dilapidated factory. And on one side was just good and coherent enough to be able to have a building that was actually electrified and could hold people to train for wrestling. So anyway, Bull Buchanan shot vignettes where he talked about just getting out of jail and things like this. And it was really like heavy duty. Nothing could have been further from the truth. He was a good, smart Christian businessman. What a good guy. One of my great friends in the business. I haven't talked to him in a long time. That's the way the wrestling business goes. And just a good dude. So, yeah, no matter what he came in and did, whether it was the coming in through the what was that damn unit? The Truth Commission, and then this incarnation of him being with Boss Man, he was going to be fine, because he's smart enough. What a fantastic wrestler for a guy his size.
Esse Rios and Lita.
Another great pairing. Got to call a lot of their matches on whatever shows I did, Metal, and fun. S.A. Rios with the largest back knee I had ever seen in my life. Just unbelievable, like boils. I didn't quite ever figure that out. But anyway, what a nice guy. Saw him a couple of years ago, Lucha Libre USA. Still a super nice guy. And Lita, of course, came in, and everybody sort of knew her reputation that she had come in with. Not a positive one, but not a negative one either. Just, you know, this girl goes to Mexico, and then she goes to ECW. She's got to be a skank. And she wasn't, you know. She turned out to be pretty cool. So, and then you got to know her. You talked to her for 5 minutes, and you're like, dang, what a nice woman. So, awesome shoulder tat, you know, had gotten her boobies done. So, yeah.
I think we mentioned this when we first recorded this, but did you ever get a chance to go back and watch that powerbomb Eddie Guerrero gives her on the floor and messes her shoulder up? It's pretty early on her run.
I did not, and I need to do that, even though I hate looking at things like that, because every time I do, it just gives me the oogies. I don't like it. But I can tell you that when I guess we had first signed her, she called me in the office and had a question about something. I don't remember what it was, or was still inquiring about getting started. And she actually told me that she had gotten her boobs done and that they looked great. Now, that I can't imagine in another job, in another world, and I wasn't even a prospective employer. I couldn't hire and fire anybody. That it was just some random, you know, thing that she put out there. Obviously, I was going to run and tell Terry Taylor as soon as I hung up the phone, which I did. So... yeah. It's just this. I'm like, only in wrestling could you say things like that and not be offended by it. I thought it was cool.
I want Scott to try to work tomorrow. What did you think about Head Cheese?
Hated it.
Oh, he's breaking that rotella tart.
Who?
Yes.
That's exactly what people say when anyone ever says his name.
Okay. Just a friend of ours. He's a big Head Cheese fan.
Good. Good. Yeah, any of the ideas that those stupid writers came up with, that felt like a Brian Gewirtz idea. And I wish his house would fall down on top of him. So, not that personally he's a bad person or he did anything bad to me. I just can't stand writers in wrestling.
Yeah. Okay.
They just don't belong, because they don't know how to make matches. I can't make matches in wrestling. Don't you understand? I didn't wrestle. That's what you have to be. You have to be a wrestler in order to be able to put matches together in wrestling, because you are asking people to trust someone with their life. And that's it. Now, can people like me suggest ideas? Can we do things? Yes, of course. We could suggest ideas. We can't make matches. We can't be responsible for people's lives. It's not fair.
All right, 24/7 hardcore title stipulation.
Loved it, especially with Crash Holly as the champion. was absolutely perfect to be able to watch Crash run away from things. So much fun. Speaking of Headbangers, when they fought in that Rye Playland or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So much fun. Going down the slides, all kinds of things. Now, that's silly wrestling nonsense that takes you out of the arena, but it worked. You know, all the things were very short and didn't last too long. Obviously, when they got to, you know, when Bobcat won the title, it's like, okay, now we're really starting to stretch it. That was one of Godfather's hoes that won. Just in case you forgot. Scott. Are you nodding off?
No.
Okay.
Sounds like it.
I know, nope, right? Like the energy, like Chad really got stronger as the broadcast went along, I thought.
I let my guests speak. Maybe Chad was cutting you off. I'm letting you speak.
No, he just really had like a lot of pizzazz.
This feels like Scott's kind of like, hey, I'm done with Kevin Kelly.
He's like, we talked about February, no way out. What else is there?
And that's it.
He won at Mania, you know?
Yep.
That's it.
He had nothing to do with any of these gimmicks, so, you know.
Yeah, so you're...
We talk about Backlash.
You're zoned out. So, yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't it Victoria?
What?
Wasn't it Victoria?
Who was Victoria?
The hoe.
No. Well,
no,
the one
she came around later.
That beat him for the title, the one that beat Crash for the title, was Bobcat, who is now Al Snow's wife.
Ah.
Has been for a number of years. She was one of Godfather's hoes.
Always derailing us. Maybe this will get him going, Kevin. The Patterson-Briscoe hardcore title feud.
Wait a minute. What do you mean, who cares? Wasn't this the stink face with the skidded underwear?
Oh, God, yeah. All of it. The dresses and everything else.
Terrible.
And he's single, guys? Isn't that what Jim Ross said? Come on.
Guys, he's single. Yes, he did.
Guys, he's single. That was after Louis had passed away. Again, just to make Briscoe throw up, let's put skid marks on Patterson's underwear. That's all you need to know. That's it.
That's all it was.
So, this took such a fun gimmick and just ran it to the ground again, I thought.
Wait a minute. Didn't they have an evening gown match?
Yeah, on pay-per-view. That was awful.
Yeah.
What did you expect?
That they shouldn't have an evening gown match between two 60-year-old men on pay-per-view.
Yes, exactly. Even if one of them was enjoying wearing a wig.
Now,
what was that?
Wow.
See, now that's what do you call that? That's hate speech right there.
That is very much hate speech. This man here that you're talking to, Kevin, is a deputy grand knight of the Knights of Columbus, and this is the kind of filth that he spews on this show.
You should know better.
This is a setup. You just want Chad back.
Don't project on us, big boy.
No. This was going on like at 5 o'clock. You two were writing this out or planning in Providence.
Hey, we didn't make
him
say that. All right. Anyway. Go ahead, Scott. Why don't you ask the next question? As carefully as possible.
No, not as carefully as possible. It's probably the truth. Edge and Christian. Let's get back to reality here. Enough of these other gimmicks. They finally found what made them. You know, they were a solid team, but they didn't find their identity. The Dudleys had a gimmick. The Hardys had a gimmick. But Edge and Christian, even coming out of Mania, still hadn't found their niche. And then finally, as time had progressed leading up to Backlash, they finally found what made it work. What was it that made him work? And what were your funny memories of the two of them combining with Kurt Angle to make Team Eck?
Well, that was, I mean, come on. That was some great stuff. A lot of that was the work of Brian Gewirtz again. So if you don't like him professionally, the way I don't like him professionally, then you can say, well, hey, good for Edge and Christian. They got over in spite of themselves. But it was good. Because, again, it gave them an identity, like you said. Those vignettes, those things that they did with Kurt were hysterical. They were really, really funny. Hey, wait, my chicken suit. I mean, that's hysterical stuff. But, again, comedy without the other side of it, you know, you gotta have both. So, and they were still... You could still get heat on them, and you could still take the measure of them without it being like, well, they're going to wrestle you and tie you in knots, and so you could, but they could sneak away with the victory. You know what I mean? and for that reason that it worked. Because Christian wasn't a big guy, and Edge wasn't a super heavyweight, so they had to work around their limitations and do it in a creative fashion and show their ass and get knocked down for it and then steal the win and live to fight another day with snarky grins on their faces.
And drinking sodas.
Yeah.
Did you like the China-Eddie Guerrero pairing?
I liked it because of Eddie. Eddie was doing all the work. You know, it was a unique pairing, and I liked Eddie in it, and I don't know. I think Joni was kind of flattered by it, actually. I think she liked the attention, so. But that was it. As far as I was concerned, yeah, that was it. Mamacita. Anytime I hear that word, though, that entrance theme really pops into my head.
Do you hear that word often?
No, I mean, anytime I have over the years, what's it been, 13 years since then? But anytime I hear the word Mamacita, then I go, Mamacita! And I have that salsa music come up in my brain. That's good branding. To me, that means it was an effective message. Because you have audio. Scott, you were a radio guy for a number of years, right? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yep.
Isn't that what we seek in radio with... You know, getting – that's why they have jingles.
Yep.
And that was a really good jingle. That one worked.
Sticks in your head. Yep. Sticks in your head. Absolutely. A guy that was kind of not staying in your head, he was kind of lost in the shuffle coming out of Mania, was the Big Show. But when he was on Saturday Night Live with Rock and Hunter and Mick right before Mania, he kind of took advantage of the much more looser atmosphere and kind of grew a bit of a comedy character and kind of gained a sense of humor. Did you like it when he was kind of, you know, putting in costumes and pretending he was various characters?
It's funny. He's still doing the same thing now. Mm-hmm. He seems to go through the ebb and flow of, you know, like the seasons. He's big, mean, nasty show. Then he's sad, crying show. Then he's funny show. Then he becomes big, mean, nasty show again. And different incarnations in between. It's been the same thing for the past 13 years. I think he's a very talented guy. I think he's been able to show. And I love the internet critics community who watch shows and can say, you know, can make these absolute declarations, you know. Oh, Big Show, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, like I read what Wade Keller said about the fact that Show got a tepid reaction after – boo-hooing and sobbing and blah, 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 blah. He's been doing this for 13 years. It isn't like it's the first time we've ever seen him, you know, blubber or laugh or be angry or show vulnerability. I think that's a remarkable skill that he has as a performer to be able to go back and forth over time. So, you know, on the surface, you look at it and it's like, oh, geez, what are we doing? Man, this guy's 7 foot plus 450 pound monster and he's up here cutting jokes. Well, I guess it worked because he's still doing it after all these years. Except now he's broke, apparently.
Ugh. Awful.
He needs another gig on Saturday Night Live. He stole the show that night.
He did. Awful. That was the one where, you know what? Out of all the people on there, because my wife knew The Rock and had met Mick, thought Hunter was yucky. Sorry, Scott. She really liked Show. She thought he was so cute and was just like, oh, look at him. And to this day, she remembers him being on that show.
It was, him coming out and singing. And then, I mean, Rock was good too with the Nicotrol and that stuff. But Show definitely kind of shocked everyone.
Right on.
You don't talk to Nicotrol like that. All right, should Chris Jericho have won the world title on Raw the night of the Dusty finish? Did that match reaction finally solidify his spot as a main eventer?
Yeah, that was where I was really starting to grow weary of all this freaking McMahon business, boy. I just... Scott, you loved it, I know. It's okay.
I did. Broke his heart. Pushed around Earl. It's just good business.
Just good business. That's it. You can always, that's your fallback. You can just go back to, hey, it was good for business.
That's right.
Did you find it shocking that they did it at the beginning of the show and not the end of the show?
No, I thought that was kind of cool.
Mm.
That was different because then it gave us the next 2 hours to kvetch over it, you know? So, yeah. And I think there was a hope. And what did they do? Did we have some kind of rematch within the body of the show?
They had like a – I think it was like a tag match or something, I feel like, after. I don't think they had a straight rematch.
Okay. Yeah, I think there was a part of me that said, hey, they could do – they might get these jokers back in the ring and make it right somehow. How are they going to pay this off? Oh, we're not. We're going to leave them upset. Okay, good.
Do you think any other time they would have just called an audible and left it on Jericho after that pop? Do you think just because they had The Rock lined up 2 weeks later, they had to put it back?
No, they knew what they were doing. So – no, unless they were going to swerve The Rock, which they weren't going to do. Because, again, where are we getting to? We're eventually going to get to next WrestleMania. So we knew Rock had to be there for that one.
Speaking of returning, we head to Backlash. And, of course, the big, although temporary, return of the man, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Clearly, as he was walking up the ramp, he wasn't 100%. He was walking very gingerly. Why here and not in Anaheim? And do you think there was enough out of that performance for people to be satisfied when he came out at Backlash?
Yeah, isn't that where he shoved me down?
Austin?
Yeah.
Was it when he came back later with the car, with Rikishi and all that stuff later in the year?
No.
He shoved you when he came back later.
Oh, he's a jerk anyway. Shoved me down. Very.
No, this is when he came out on SmackDown before and blew up the DX Express. Terrible. And then came out and helped The Rock win the world title. And then he came out after and they toasted each other. And
vaguely. Mm. I really don't remember. But why not WrestleMania? Because it was not we talked about this last time. I don't ever remember him being part of the conversation. I think that once you're booked, and that's it. And if they can't put you on the poster and they can't sell tickets to advertise you, then you're not going to be there. You know what I mean? It's WrestleMania, for God's sakes. So I think maybe that might be part of it. I'm not 100% sure. I think maybe he was it could have been that he wasn't 100% ready to go, that he felt good enough to go only 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later or whatever it was. And so that's why it was done then. I don't remember the exact specifics of like I don't remember there being like a lot of back and forth debate like will he or won't he? Will we have Austin? Won't we have Austin? You know, like I don't even remember really his name being in conversation about it.
I didn't really like the way they used him anyway. They announced him as being in the Rock's corner. He only comes out for the final like 2 minutes. To me, if you're going to announce him as being on, they should at least deliver him a little bit more and tease. Hey, Austin may be there this Sunday. Tune in to see what he does. But by saying he's going to be in the Rock's corner and then he's only out there for the last like whatever minute of the match, to me was just kind of stupid.
Well, April is harder to sell than Mania, so suck it up, Buttercup.
Nice.
We got your money, fool.
You didn't, sir, but you got my money. Undertaker's return a month later. Did you like the badass character? Was that a memorable night for you? Thoughts on Vince's crazy duck walk he did when Taker comes in the ring and he stomps around and tugs on his ear before eating a right hand?
There was a... There was something that was cool about it. I really enjoyed the vibe. I really enjoyed the I felt like he had taken the dead man character as far as it could go at that time. It's a new era. It's the attitude era. Let's do something different. And then inevitably he could go back to being the dead man. And that was what he did. So by seizing upon kind of his real life outside the ring and what he liked to do and made him comfortable away from wrestling, he was really into bikes and he was really into being a badass. So there you go. Combine two of his most favorite things.
As you head to the following month in Louisville for Judgment Day, for the first time since WrestleMania 12, we attempt an Iron Man match. Now, obviously the climate has changed from March of 1996. Could you put the Attitude Era into an Iron Man match and have it work? Were there any skeptics heading into that, booking that match? And does this, can this match be at the same level as Bret and Shawn in terms of Iron Man matches?
No, and I think it was different. I think there was, you know, could The Rock go 60 minutes? Could, like we talked earlier on about whether or not, you know, Triple H had the game to be able to step up and, you know, go with Mick and that type of element. You know, could Rock do that 60-minute Iron Man match with Hunter? That was a big question. Mm-hmm. I didn't doubt it for a second. And knowing, you know, having Shawn as the guest referee, yeah, sure, that was going to be, it was just going to be a good athletic contest. You knew that. Guys were going to, you know, test of endurance, no doubt about it. But it was kind of a shootout, right? It was like 6-5?
Yeah, yes. 6-5. They had the DQs and the other kind of, was there a count out in there somewhere and all kinds of crazy falls. And I thought it was booked really, really well.
Yeah, again, not every National Hockey League game is 1-0 or 2-1. Some of them are 6-5 or 7-6. Hell, Boston's beaten Detroit 20-4 tonight. So there you go.
Just pop it on. Yep.
So sometimes you're going to have high-scoring affairs, and why not this one? It eats up time.
Do you like it better than the WrestleMania 12?
I did. I had a lot of fun at this show. I had a lot of fun at the seeing it live. I saw this one live. I didn't see the one in Anaheim live, and I really liked this one. Even with the timing issue at the end, which is a great debate, whether or not something happened, did it? We may never know.
All right. The next month in Boston, we have the King of the Ring tournament. Felt really mismanaged. They didn't really utilize the load of talent they had. Just some of the guys they had involved in the tournament and moving on. You had Crash going to the second round. Your buddy Bull Buchanan, nice guy, but probably didn't really fit in maybe this tournament as to where he fell in the seating. It seemed like they kind of wasted an opportunity to deliver a really strong tournament. And Kurt Angle won, but did he really come out stronger than when he went in? I feel like nobody really benefited from this tournament. You had Jericho losing the first round to Angle. You had Rikishi advancing, but he had the bum shoulder, and Benoit got DQ'd 3 minutes in, which is totally against his character to be stupid and get DQ'd with a chair. And Val advances over Eddie. It just feels like they pissed away a good chance to deliver a classic tournament.
Boy, you're just Mr. Negative about this thing, aren't you?
Yep.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, guess in hindsight, sure, they could have. I did kind of feel like this was Russo booking this one a little bit. I don't know why they did what they did. Maybe because they felt like, okay, we can use this to elevate other people. But at the end of the day, if you don't have them beating people of substance, then what do you have? Like, Jericho had to beat Rock and Austin the same night to become the first undisputed world champion. So if he would have beaten Crash Holly and Val Venus, would it have mattered? Would it have meant as much? Probably not. So, yeah, I see the point. And who wound up winning? Kurt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, it was, you know, it was all about Kurt winning. So at least you got that. But who did he beat? Some might say it doesn't really matter. But, yeah, if you mismanage assets, then is that a good thing? No, obviously not. But there was still money matches on the table, no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think they had a good chance to really deliver great matches and a stronger booking, and they kind of whiffed on both of that show.
I think Kevin Dunn hates tournaments, so that might have been part of it.
Which sucks. His tournaments are awesome, as we're learning right now, Ring of Honor.
Thank you.
Tournaments are awesome.
Not if you hate wrestling.
Yes, very true. Yeah, it's just disappointing, because to me, all of a sudden, the two of the biggest shows of the year, WrestleMania and King of the Ring, ended up being two of the weaker shows so far in 2000, which was kind of disappointing. Mm.
Fair point.
The other problem with that show, besides the tournament, was this mangled, multi-stipulation, weirdo six-man tag. Rock wins the title by pinning Vince, instead of Triple H. The belt bounced around a lot over this stretch. Did you feel that both that happening, the belt being kicked around, and Rock pinning Vince and not Triple H, think it hurt the quality of the title at that point? And maybe Rock should have kept it at Judgment Day instead of Triple H winning it? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, anytime you start to do hot potato with the world title, I'm not a big fan of it. But I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember the reasons why it was done in the way that it was done. Obviously, to get the, I always thought that a lot of what they did with the pay-per-view footage was to get Vince, you know, to get the brand on like a Entertainment Tonight or an ESPN or something like that. So maybe Rock beating Vince to win the world title would be something so out of the box that there might be some press coverage on it. I don't know. Again, always trying to get more than what they had into marketing that they didn't have a foothold in where they have it now. So, as is the case with Titus O'Neil dating Omarosa. You know, I mean, that's obviously, they've got some good publicity people there. So, I think if you do a finish like that today, it has a much better response than it would have in 2000.
I actually thought the story and that finish was okay. I just didn't like that. I think Rock should have just been champion going in. I think the hot potato and having a pin Vince to win the title hurt. But the whole story was that Triple H didn't trust what Vince was doing, and Vince ended up fucking up in the end, and it leads to the breakup of the faction there. So I thought that part of it was fine. I thought it was stupid that the title changed like that. It should have just been a defense from the Rock.
Well, yeah, but again, to get the pop, to get the change on TV, to get the, you know, then to get it back to where he wins. So I see the point. And I definitely see, you know, with what they did and the reasons why they did it because of where they were going to go with separating Vince and Triple H. Yeah, that made sense too. So but you could make the argument who had more heat, Vince or Triple H.
True. What did you think of Bad News Brown's 1990? That's a question that just came up from one of the members of Place to Be Nation. I don't know where that came from, but
yeah, I don't either. It's very strange. Odd.
Well, I hope he had a good year. I mean, you know, did he save his money? I don't know. He's a Canadian. Do Canadians get paid in American and then they got to go home with this godforsaken exchange rate?
Yeah, I would think so. Right?
And then pay all those taxes. Ugh.
Does anyone miserable. Live in Canada though, or they're just Canadian?
I don't know. Did he live in Canada?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
A lot of mystery surrounding Bad News Brown's living.
I thought he was from Harlem.
All right. All right, Kev, last question here. Thoughts on the state of the company midway through this year? Still humming along. Any concern or issue about the future of the company, WCW, or just in general?
Well, I was right about the... No, everything was good. I was in a mean state of discontent right now, personally and professionally. So while everything was going well booking wise, I was much happier the year before in like May of 99. I just felt like everything was going, but isn't this what we had wanted? Didn't we want to have all these guys that we had, the Jerichos, the Dudleys, the guys from WCW? Isn't this what we had been working towards? And now we had them and I was all of a sudden like, meh, you know? I don't know. I was becoming one of those people for a while. So
you're becoming the internet?
A little bit. I was, yeah. Like Monday morning quarterbacking, you know, it was like brutal. So.
Well, I got the blog for you, buddy.
No, that was then.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, I was a big Monday morning quarterbacker then. Now I'm like, I totally see both sides. That job's rotten. Especially when you know, in that environment, forget about it. How they get anything in the ring is beyond me. Even back then. Now it's even worse.
All right. Well, on that high note, we're going to wrap up.
Oh, jeez.
Debbie Downer.
Depressing.
What a bummer. Well, you asked me. How did I feel at that point? I didn't feel good.
Go watch some global wrestling, Kevin. That'll make you feel a lot better.
That damn thing on my DirecTV is extra money.
I told you. I'm going to ship you the DVDs. I'm just going to get your address.
Okay.
I finally cut myself off because I'm at like 20 of these things, and I'm just like, all right, I got to stop.
You don't even know if any of them are duplicates.
They probably are. Who knows? But it's great. It's great global action.
That's fantastic. And thanks for sending me the link of Eddie Guerrero destroying Lita's shoulder.
Did you watch it?
No, not yet. Okay. Well, I didn't want to watch it while I was on the show here with you. Where's RJ Brewer doing?
We're going to leave him at home, wherever he is.
Okay, let's not get him into this again.
I'll bring him back on.
Jesus.
He's building his wall.
Get his thoughts on Syria? Come on. I'm sure he's got a good point of view.
Oh, really? Do you follow him on Twitter or Facebook? Because there's about 80 million comments about it every day. Nothing better to do that guy.
All right, so the countdown to Pittsburgh is on January 25th.
Yes. And then we gotta go out after. How about that? Maybe we'll finally get together. Are you going to stay in town that night?
No, I'm coming straight home.
Oh, what a pain in the ass.
Forget it. Forget it. It's Pittsburgh. I live 3 hours from there. I can come home and sleep in my own bed.
Well, maybe I'll get a glimpse of you again at the end of the show.
No, let's try it. We'll try to get there a little earlier. What'd you get there, like 5 o'clock?
In Providence?
Yeah.
It was a little bit earlier than that. We were there for lunch. But in Pittsburgh, we land at like 10 a.m., so I will be there all day Saturday.
All right, so no complaining.
There'll be no complaining from me, sir.
No. We'll all right, and Scott, what about you?
My plans are still up in the air, but if I do go, I will be there as well.
You'll be paying full price.
The great thing about Ring of Honor is it is affordable for all.
That's right.
Good save.
It's not like paying for Rumble tickets.
I'll figure out a way to comp you for Ring of Honor. I think.
And John Cena will not be there to ruin everything. So
don't let the cat out of the bag.
Oh, God.
He's going to win the tournament, isn't he?
Yeah, of course he is.
That'd be awesome. That'd be the greatest heat you could ever get as a company. If you brought him in and I win the damn tournament.
A spinner Ring of Honor belt. That'd be awesome.
That's right.
Pin Michael Elgin with the FU. All right, Kevin Kelly, you're the man as always. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Scott, let's take a breather. We'll come back and wrap up.
Because?
Nah.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever. But what about David Crockett?
What about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Now, if you want nonstop old school NWA discussion, getting back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu. And there they are, the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to the return of the hack, you've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts. Of course, besides Chad and Parf, we have Grapple Talk, the fans podcast, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and the Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, Check out the news and the great forums at TWFnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, Attitude Era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. But check out all there is to see right on TWFnews.com.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where, what the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, so you better not miss it, because I'm on it.
All right, Scott, another episode with Kevin in the books. This one's going to make it to air because I'm going to do it right now. Nothing will be deleted or lost, but Kevin, great as always. To come back and redo that entire thing was fantastic.
Yes, no, it was awesome. And Ring of Honor's, it's burgeoning. Mm-hmm. Usually they only go in town for Mania, but pretty gutsy. Well, not gutsy, I mean, they'll make good money in Pittsburgh. So that's a smart idea.
Yeah,
and of course, as time progresses, we'll talk New Orleans too. So. Mm-hmm.
All right, sir, let's quickly. The NFL predictions are going to take on a little bit different of a face this year. We're not going to do the whole long segment. This show has become too in-depth and meaty, and we don't do the headlines as often, so it's just too much to go through them all. So what we're going to do is we're going to quickly give you our predictions. We're just going to run through the games, and then for more analysis and power rankings and all that, you can visit PlaceToBeNation.com. So, all right, Scott, I will read the game, give you my pick, you pick yours, and then at the end we'll just say who our suicide, upset, and lock of the week are.
Okay.
Denver home for Baltimore Thursday night opener. I'm going to take Denver there.
I am too.
Okay. Buffalo at New England at Buffalo. I like New England in a route.
Yeah, I'd like to think EJ Manuel will at least look respectable, but I think the Pats win.
All right. Cincy at Chicago. Kind of a big game here for Cincy, trying to make their mark. Chicago bouncing back off a weird year. I'm going to take Cincy to go into Chicago and win this game.
This is a tough one because I like both teams. I think both are going to win their divisions. I'm going to take the Bears here at home. I think they'll hold serve at home.
All right. Miami at Cleveland. Cleveland's got a lot of underdog love in this one. I think the expectations are running a little bit high in the media, and I'm not sure why for Cleveland. I mean, I think they'll be okay, but I think Miami's going to be decent this year, so I like Miami on the road.
I'm going to take Miami, too. Cleveland's going to need some time to fix whatever problems they have. Richardson should be the focal point of this offense. I don't know if he is or not, but I like the Dolphins.
Minnesota and Detroit. I like Detroit too. I think AP will have a good day, but I think Ponder gets picked off a couple times, and Detroit wins that game in a shootout.
That's pretty much going to be the modus operandi for the Vikings. AP will run for about $175. Ponder will throw two picks. They'll lose by a field goal. I like the Lions.
All right. Oakland at Indy. I think Oakland gets routed here. Indy wins this one easy.
Yeah, I think Andrew Luck's going to come out, throw well. I think Pryor's going to struggle, and I think the Colts win.
All right, big game, Atlanta at New Orleans. We talked all about this with Kyle Forchetti on our preview show. I like New Orleans at home here, a statement game.
I concur. I think the Saints win, too, as well. Big close game, but I like the Saints.
All right, Tampa Bay at the Jets against all good thought. I'm taking the Jets here. I feel like everyone is swung behind Tampa. It's actually becoming a pretty big value proposition in a lot of places with the Jets. I still like their defense a lot. I think Cromartie matches up well with Vincent Jackson. Doug Martin may give them a little bit of a tough time, but their defensive line has gotten very good. I just think the Jets come out and they win a low scoring game.
Would the Jets? Yeah, I like the Jets as well, actually. Although I do think, I hate to say it, it may be an ugly, depending what the score is, I think Revis runs up back a pick and does the Jet wings.
We'll see.
I think he's going to
I think Smith plays a smart game. One strong point of Marty Mornhinweg is that he knows how to tailor offense to guys. He's like the Paul Heyman of offensive coordinators.
Yes, yes.
Knows how to tailor an offense to hide guys and protect guys. So I think he'll scheme well. And it looks like Holmes is going to play, so that's a big part of it, too. I think Tennessee goes into Pittsburgh and gets destroyed, so I like Pittsburgh there.
Yeah, Steelers should win that one. Yeah.
All right. Seattle goes into Carolina and takes care of business.
I like the Seahawks as well. I think it'd be a tough opener for Cam Newton.
All right. KC at Jacksonville. I like Kansas City in this one.
I do as well.
St. Louis at Arizona. St. Louis.
Yes, I like the Rams too. I think the Cardinals will keep it close, but I like the Rams.
All right, Green Bay at San Fran. I think San Fran holds serve at home. We get a repeat of the NFC playoff game, and they win.
I like the Packers here. I think this is the first of many times this year where you will finally see some of Colin Kaepernick's weaknesses. I think Aaron Rodgers wants to make a point. He's going to make a point immediately. I like the Packers.
All right, Giants at your boys. I'm going to take the Giants here because I think they win the division. I think this is the first step towards it. I think the Cowboys give them a game. I will say it. I don't think it'll be Tony Romo's fault that they lose this game.
I think it'll be the reverse. I think you'll finally see the Giants lead in the fourth quarter, and I think Romo's going to have a great fourth quarter. I like the Cowboys at home.
All right. I like Washington at home to take care of Philadelphia, but I think it'll be a lot closer than people think.
I think McCoy's going to have a great game. I think RG3 will play well, but like you said, protecting. And I think he will stay in the pocket. Cross your fingers for that Redskin offensive line. I think Washington wins.
All right. And Houston goes into San Diego and stomps on the Chargers. I think the Chargers are going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year.
Yeah, I like the Texans too.
All right. My lock of the week is New England in Buffalo. I think they might win by 40 in that game. My upset pick is the Jets. And my suicide will be Pittsburgh.
Okay. My lock of the week is the Dolphins. I think they're going to beat the Browns fairly handily. I'm actually going to steal your upset. I like the Jets upset too. I have a good feeling about them. And I got a question to ask you if we have a moment at the end of the show about your team. But I like the Jets in an upset. My suicide, this might be a little kooky, but I'm going to take Kansas City to beat Jacksonville. That's my suicide.
Okay.
Just to confirm, your suicide again was?
Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Do you want to now, ask quick?
Yes. You heard the story of the weekend. Of course, Rex Ryan, your boy, went to the Clemson game.
Yeah, I think it's a bullshit story.
Everybody thinks that he's like, oh, he doesn't care about the Jets anymore. No, they're not playing this week.
No, I think Manish Mehta is a joke of a writer. I think he has some kind of weird vendetta with the team or with Rex. I mean, everyone pretty much called him out on that. Herm Edwards and all these other guys, Tony Dungy, stood up and kind of shut him down. And there were a lot of coaches around the league that were at their kids' games on Saturday. And give me a break. You think he's not making decisions still while he's on the road? I mean, there's no reason he can't go. Take a game, fly back on the team charter or whatever, and get back to camp. It's not a big deal. All right, let's wrap up there, Scott. Monday night, we'll be back with fully loaded 2000. Finally, back in the vaults. Feels like it's been forever. And Wednesday nights, we have headlines, of course, with the Money in the Bank. I'm sorry, it'll be, what's next? Tuesday
night. Tuesday night.
Night of Champions preview headlines. We'll go through a week two. And Steve Willey will be with us for our Meet the Nation segment. So that's Scott. I'm Justin for Kevin Kelly as well. Thank you, PTB Nation. Have a great rest of your week. Great weekend. Check out PoliceBNation.com. Come often. And we will talk to you soon. Cromartie. The Cromartie house.
The Cromartie condo with all the kids. Hope you slip up off your path. I don't switch up, I just laugh. Put my kicks up on they desk, unaffected by they threats. Then get busy on they ass. See, that's how that shit tell me, man. That's how my daddy raised me. That glittering may not be gold. Don't let nobody play, man. If you are my homeboy, you never have to pay, man. Go on and put your hands up. When times is hard, you stand up. L-U-P the man, cause a brand that the fans trust. So even if they ban, I still never slow my plans up. For the father that's there, three in the air for the kids in the ghetto, four for the kids that don't wanna be there, none for the niggas trying to hold him back, five in the air for the teacher not scared to tell those kids that's living in the ghetto that the niggas holding back that the world is theirs. Yeah, yeah, the world is yours. I was once that little boy, terrified of the world. Now I'm on a world tour. I will give up everything, even start a world war for these ghetto girls and boys. I'm rapping around the world for Africa to New York, Haiti then I detour, Oakland out to Oakland. Gaza Strip to Detroit, say hip-hop only destroy. Tell them, look at me, boy. I hope your son don't have a gun and never be a D-boy. What you've been through, no.
No matter what you into, no matter what you see, when you look outside your window, brown grass or green grass, picket fence or barbed wire, never ever put them down. You just lift your arms higher, raise them till your arms tire. Let them know you there, that you struggling, surviving, that you gon' persevere. Yeah, ain't nobody leaving, nobody going home. Even if they turn the lights out, the show is going on.